Have you been looking for a Taekwondo podcast with qualified people who know what they're talking about, who help you keep up with everything going on in the Taekwondo world? Well, you found it. This is the Taekwondo Podcast. Taekwondo news, competitions and other events, training and sports science, keeping the fans, coaches and high-performance athletes up to date with the latest news and trends on Olympic Taekwondo. Let's do this. This is the Taekwondo Podcast. And now your hosts, Coach Cesar Valentim and Peter Nessler.
Hello and welcome to the Taekwondo Podcast. We're a podcast based out of Austria, in English language, for everyone out there likes Taekwondo. In this episode, we talk about different topics, like, again, the new changes in the rules, and a little bit about para Taekwondo Pumsa. Welcome to our podcast. I'm Coach Cesar Valentim, and with me is again my co-host, Peter Nessler. Hi, Peter. How are you?
Hi, Cesar. Back again in 2023. We had a pretty long break, but I'm happy to be back on the podcast and looking forward to talking with you.
You have been very busy, but it's okay. We had some guests that had some nice interviews. Probably people were not very happy to listen to me on the first episode of the year when I was talking alone about the calendar. But again, feedback was quite positive because people listened to the calendar, listened to my opinions, and some feedback I heard was that they helped them plan. And that's why we're here. We're a high-performance Taekwondo podcast. We focus on the high-performance training science and, of course, how to bring the high-performance athletes to a better training, to a better result, and to, of course, talk a lot about the sport that we love, the Taekwondo. Okay. And you, what have you been up to?
Well, there's a lot of things going on, not only in Kyurugi, so the whole world is moving in Taekwondo. World Taekwondo has set up an ad hoc committee for para Pumse Taekwondo, which had the first task to set up new rules, to go over the old rules, create new rules, and we are pretty through, so it's done, this job. So now we're getting to the educational part, and yeah, it's very interesting in the moment. And besides, there was a lot of championships where I had to be, or where I was refereeing or coaching or whatever. So world is moving. That's good.
You've been to Los Angeles recently. What were you doing there?
Los Angeles, we have been between Christmas and New Year at the winter training camp for Pumse this time. We were at the Kyurugi camp from Jesus Lomal in the past. This time we tried some Pumse camp. It was led by Master Sangje Lee, who is one of the U.S. national coaches, with the very excellent experience on Taekwondo Pumse and how to train and how to do the Pumse. It was really worth it. And with this, by the way, we had some nice sightseeing in Los Angeles, which is always nice.
Yes, I'm pretty sure going in December to Los Angeles, where the weather is much nicer than Austria, it was a good adventure, yeah. The WT is working a lot on new committees. Pumse, para Pumse rules, maybe we can have a second half of the episode talking about that. Because, of course, as you know, I was in the first committee that wrote the first rules. And it was quite an interesting task. And there was a big hiatus since 2017 until now when it comes to para Taekwondo Pumse. And it's not the main focus of this podcast, but why not? We both love para Taekwondo. I have my para Taekwondo athletes and I see and work every day. And it's nice that we can actually talk about that a little bit later on. Let's talk again about the rules. The rules may be a little confusing with the changes that came out. They came out today with immediate effect. They were approved in an e-vote, that General Assembly e-vote, that allowed the presidents of the member national associations to approve them on a fast track. So they came out as an amendment a few weeks ago, and they came out today as official, automatically implemented. Not much change, but a little things that we've seen and that we actually talked about in the podcast recently. that the new Pumsi the Kyurugi refereeing committee is trying to get more Korean in some way. One of the things that they did was they removed the command of fight for the inactivity of the players, or even for the kanjun of inactivity of the players. And then they don't say the word fight anymore. They say attack or be aggressive. But they don't say it in English either. They say it in Korean. So gongkyok, another Korean word that referees will have to learn, that coaches will have to learn, that the trainers in training will have to start using so that the players get used to it. What do you think about that?
First of all, I mean, it's basically the same meaning than before. So before it was fight, now it is gongjok. The coaches might not understand what the referee is shouting or telling them. It's for European or for a Western guy with a Western language, it's two words. Fight is much shorter, so it's would be better to have a short one, but it's okay for me to have that more Korean. A lot of the other commands are in Korean, so why not this one as well? I think it's just a minor change, and we should just look into the real changes they had. It's not so much, but the gongjok.
Gongkyok is okay. Let's see how it comes out. The players will have to get used to it. I think the more the referee intervenes and the more the referee talks in the middle of the match does harm the fluency of the match. It intervenes in the players, as it should be for safety reasons. But fight was an international word. We've been using it forever, even before it was in the rules, the sign and the way the word fight was there. And yeah, okay, the saying attack, be attack, aggressive, or start, take the initiative. Those are some of the meanings of these words. Will eventually come into our lingo. It will come into our normal standing procedures of operating a taekwondo match and training in a taekwondo kyurugi. And let's see how long it takes. It's an approach to the Korean meaning of the words. Maybe they will come out with a Korean translation for monkey kicks and for fish kicks or something. Then let's see what comes out. Then the only big rule that changed actually was that the referees are allowed to give a second kamjon if there is some misconduct followed the kicking after kalyo kamjon. So basically the referees are now allowed to give two kamjons for a totally different situation. We had a situation where people would step out of the line and do something illegal. They would get two kamjons. Now the two kamjons again for kicking after the kalyo command from the referee. The kalyo means break or pause. And then if there's a misconduct from one of the players, there's a second kamjon to be given. Those are might not seem like too much, but again, giving so many power to the referees when players are only allowed to give four kamjons per round, it's a little bit too much. What do you think?
It gives a lot of power, actually, because as you said, it's only four, is allowed four kamjons per round. And when the fighter already has, let's say, three, might be over. So three is not that much. I don't know if there is any statistics on how many kamjons there is per round in an average fight, but three is it happens, yeah. And if that one happens as well with the two kamjons, then it's over. Off, yeah, it is a reason. Yeah, that's true, but it interferes a little bit too much into the fight. But let's see how it works out in the practical part.
Well, let's see about the statistics. I have, of course, the statistics for my team. I know how many kamjons they usually do per round.
Of course
I do. But I don't think there is no. I know there's a statistics of how many video replays were approved and rejected. Mm-hmm. That in every mm-hmm. competition, it's done. But about how many kamjons every player gets per fight, I don't know. Maybe that's something someone is listening and was interesting to do it. Please, if you have it, send it to us. Our email is easy. It's taekwondopodcast@gmail.com, or leave us a comment on one of our social media networks, and we'll be glad to give you the credit and talk about it in a later episode. The other rules that changed, it's a little bit more on the administrative side. The competition supervisory board and the fact that they were allowed to create, as a competition supervisory board's immediate decisions, immediately penalties, financial fees to be paid. Now, the committee can only initiate a disciplinary procedure that needs to go through the proper channels in the WT. I do think that's correct. I think in some cases, yes, the disciplinary committee needs to be acting as fast as the competition supervisory board. We can remember the 2008 Ángel Matos situation at the Beijing Olympics, where he kicked the referee and he had to be sanctioned immediately. It would not be possible to have what we had in Beijing that few hours after it happened. There was a public announcement with the decision. Probably at the Olympic Games, the disciplinary committee will be and the legal department from WT will be present. But in most competitions, it won't. And it's basically the deciding for a future stage what kind of situation to be done. And that's okay, because that's due justice. That's due procedure. The players need to, and the witnesses need to be heard. Both cases need to be presented. The defense needs to argue the accusations. So a normal disciplinary procedure done by people in the legal department instead of 3 to 5 people nominated by an event organizing committee. I think the changes are not for the players, not interesting. For us that do this for a living is something that is important. And I can understand. I heard that I heard the rumors that some coaches got suspended after some things that happened at the World Championships in Guadalajara. And if they were decided at the competition supervisory board or later on a disciplinary committee from WT, I don't know. Again, it's not something I want to get into it. But the due process is being implemented at the level that the rules, the competition rules, already mention it. And I think that's something that it's not too so common to see. Competition rules, the rules of the game or how the game is played, and already mentioning disciplinary actions to a detail that they are in our rules. What do you think about that?
I mean, you can do it, it's a little strict. I mean, we should keep sports open much more. So I'm not happy. I'm not really happy with that, but let's see how it develops in real life. Yeah.
I guess we'll have to wait just a few more weeks. We will have competition soon. We will
It works.
We're recording the podcast on the last weekend of January. So when we're out, it's going to be 29th, 31st, actually the last day of January. It's when the podcast is being released, so just a few weeks away from the big competitions. A few days, we will have the President's Cup, we will have Fujairah Open, we will have Turkish Open, where those rules will be implemented. Then later on, Canada, Slovenia, Costa Rica. So we will have a few events where we'll see how it works. I wasn't attending any of the recent referee seminars. I hope that they mention it on the seminars. If not, it's a shame, because we just had a couple of them, a big one now in Dubai. And it takes time, until especially when a new name, a new word in Korean comes into the lexicon from the referees, is going to be a little time to be implemented. And I'm pretty sure some will still be saying fight, because it's normal. They've been saying it 10 times a minute for the last few years. So let's see how it happens. The Taekwondo is getting, it's getting very exciting. And I see the events coming up this year. We have a lot of events. We have the youth games in Pan American region. We have the European games. We have world championships again in Baku. I see the technology improving. We had a podcast with Dedo where they presented exclusively to us the Generation 3. We know that most events in the upcoming weeks will be with the Korean KPNP system. And that's something that is also not so normal, to have so many KPNP tournaments in Europe. We will have in Bulgaria, we'll have in Slovenia. Some are not open yet. We see some outlines out there. Austrian Open, for example, has an outline out there, but doesn't announce which kind of PSS is going to be used. But having so many events in the upcoming weeks with a system that most people don't have, and in Europe, it's very hard to buy because they're out of stock. If you wanted to buy some from the suppliers in Germany, they are not having them in stock. You have to get them imported from Korea with all the transport delays and import taxes and all these things. Then clubs will have to adapt. And I'm pretty sure that most clubs and national federations don't have the systems out there. What do you expect from the first tournaments to be like? Some surprises from the ones who are more prepared?
Definitely. So in that case, I don't know how much the changes will be, how much they will, what they do to the fights. But if you're not prepared to new system, then you will always be second. That's very clear. So as you said, most of the federations, most of the clubs won't have that system, which is on the other end, it's good because then it's for everyone. But the ones who work professionally, who already worked with that system, tried it with real fights, they will have an advantage, definitely.
Let's see how the first weeks will come now. And pretty sure that we need to do a lot of podcasts about what we've seen on the first event. Looking forward to the live streaming when possible about the competitions. And the systems is definitely going to make a change. But also players have been developing. We had a lot of young players coming in from Greece, from Hungary, from Spain, coming all the way to the scene. At the World Championships, we had a few surprises. Iran with a total new national team, a lot of people with 18, 19, 20. And I think the surprise this year, a year that is very important because it's the last year before Olympic qualification, it's going to be interesting to watch. Have you been noticing in Austria, in Germany, you've been traveling a lot, that there's some new surprises coming out of the pipeline?
In my opinion, it's in a moment like in film business, it's the old generation disappears slowly. Like the old generation, I don't want to speak about any names because I don't want to call anybody old. But as you said, there will be quite a lot young fighters, not really no names because they were at some events before. You don't pop out from nowhere in Taekwondo. But there will be some surprises this year, definitely. Yeah. And as the calendar is very, very dense, a lot of championships, I think it's even more than before, their chance will be pretty good to grab gold medals at the Chi events or also at the regional or world games.
The G events this year are back to G1. We have two G2 tournaments per region plus President's Cup. The G tournaments will be a little more frequented because people will not be able to get the 40 points so easily. They will have to have maybe one or two more events that they had last year to even the top players. And the competition is packed. Do you think that is there any strategy that you would do? And I asked this question 1 year ago, exactly when we were doing this podcast about the calendar back in 2022. Is there any strategy of going for events that are closer, events that are less frequented? What would be the strategy for a smaller club this kind of the year?
It always depends on the quality of the material. Material in that case is the fighter. If the fighter is good, no matter, then you could do it as it fits into your training plan, or you can adapt the training plan to the event's schedule. When you don't have the top fighters, you have to search for events that are not that crowded, which you will get the chance for in this year as well. No problem, because there's a lot of events, also smaller events in each region, like Hotter region or Europe in Asia. Yeah, also maybe, but not that easy because they are always crowded. So the strategy is quite easy. You have your athletes ready now because season is starting in a few days, and then go for it. You always have to take into account that you mightn't reach your goal of points until, let's say, September, October, and then there's some events left for you. Should be okay.
Yeah, that's been the case. We've known for the last decade, at least since the point cap exists, that the players will look for the points as early as possible so they can get seeded at the big events, the Grand Prix, qualifications, Grand Prix themselves, and the European Continental or World Championships. And leaving the second half for you to get easier points, the tournaments, even they are crowded or not, there are a lot more juniors trying seniors for the first year. There are a lot of more events that have less participation numbers, smaller participation numbers. So I always say getting a medal in August or September is not the same as getting a medal in March or April, because it is harder. We have the reality that the events are much more competitive, not from the numbers, but from the level of players participating. And one of the things I've been advocating for a long is that the ranking would be either the world ranking, Olympic ranking, or even national rankings should reflect that. They should reflect not only the that the tournament is a G tournament, G1 or G2, because that doesn't really matter. It's about how many countries and how many top 20 players are competing on each weight division. Then you will have the difficulty of the tournament, because it's not the same to make a gold medal in a tournament where you have 10 players, zero ranked, like some events we had in France later last year, and then getting a gold medal there, or getting a bronze medal in an event where you have all the top nations and the top players that compete at the Grand Prix in your weight division attending that event. So the performance analysis and also the weight of the events and the national rankings and the world and the international rankings should be able to reflect that. They don't. We're not like ATP rankings and ours, where you would match the opponent you're matched to would actually inflict on how much points you win or even lose in a ranking. And at national level, it should be more realistic. It should be fair for to have a little difference between the weight of the tournament of the medal you won, because not all medals are made equal. But again, it's maybe not in the interest of everyone. In Austria, for example, they did something very interesting. Now, the new ranking for the national federation for you to qualify for the national team, the only counts G tournaments in Europe. So I see some players, they're good players. They still go to Egypt Open. They might even go to Gorilla Open. But that's for them to get points for the World and Olympic rankings. But it don't bring them anything, because in the national ranking, they don't want to do it. That's basically implying a rule of democracy, not buying the points, not the ones who have money travel to Puerto Rico and the ones who don't have money have to go to Belgian Open. As example of the difference of number of players competing on each weight division, but it helps also the quality of the events and the ranking to be harder. You don't only buy the points, you earn the points, and you earn them if you are in Europe in the toughest G tournament circuit there is, the European circuit. And I think if every federation does it like that, it's a strategy for qualifying for the national team. But of course, strategy for national team and strategies for countries that have different settings, different goals, and where the importance is to get the points in the Olympic ranking, going to the easier tournaments where you get the 10 or 20 points with just three fights, it's of course much more sinful than spending 20 points for having six fights at the Austrian Open or the club events like that. So the rankings and the tournaments and preparations, as you said, it comes to what kind of players you have in your factory. Because if your players are not at a high level, and when not at a high level means, for example, I have players that are national champions, and yet they don't get medals at Europeans and the World Championships. So they're not compared to Olympic athletes. So it depends, of course, on the weight division, because having a weight division in 49 or 57 is not the same as other divisions. And we have to understand that when I say top players, in some countries, nobody has top players. And in other countries, they have a lot of top players in each division. Spain, for example, if you look at most of the divisions, they will have two, three players fighting neck on neck to be on the national team nomination. And if it was not for the cap on two players per country on the Grand Prix, they would even have four or five on each weight division. So deciding which tournaments to go, yes, depends on the situation. In Austria, now that we have this rule, you have to go to these and these tournaments. We have the rule that we have to go to three tournaments that are mandatory for you to gather points. And if you don't get the points there, you get them somewhere else. Good on you, but they will not qualify you for the national team. And I think that's the solution, being imposed by the federations, and it's in a fair, honest, democratic way that is not buying the points, because going to Canada Open is not the same as going to Belgian Open.
Yeah, very much like that idea of keeping the athletes to not buy points, because the system as it is now, the ranking system, is by far not perfect. There could be a lot of things done better. As you mentioned, it is important to against whom you win your points. That should be reflected in the rules, in the ranking bylaw. I like the idea. It's good. And it keeps the athletes in Europe as well. So why not?
Yeah, I guess we have to invite Austrian Federation president to come here and explain why he did it. And but let's talk about that on another episode. And then sure. The second half of this episode, let's talk about your projects in Parapoopsie, because I'm pretty sure a lot of the coaches want to see what's going on over there.
This podcast is supported by Hocken Dynamics. Hocken Dynamics believes that technology is most useful when it stays out of your way. That's why Hocken developed the world's first wireless force plate system with extreme usability. It is the quickest, easiest to use, and most robust solution on the market. It is trusted by all sports organizations, large and small, as well as tactical, military, and rehabilitation environments around the globe. It's force testing in the palm of your hand. Here at Vintekundo Center, we use Hocken Dynamics to test and monitor our team. The cloud-based platform allows us to access data and publish a variety of reports on the go. My favorites are trend reports and, of course, weight reports, where I can monitor different metrics to view progress and identify performance indicators, or to compare weights to a baseline data range. I use it on a daily basis to identify readiness. A simple jumping test takes me less than a minute to assess the entire team. Having my own Hocken Dynamics force plates allows me to test reactive strengths, maximum strengths, rate of force development, asymmetry, and so much more. The real-time feedback on the app is useful, not only for testing, but as a training tool, making it more accurate and at the same time more engaging for the athletes. If you are interested in learning more about Hocken Dynamics or getting your own, the team can be reached at info@hockendynamics.com or on Instagram or Twitter @HockenDynamics.
This podcast is sponsored by FirstBeat Sports. FirstBeat Sports combines the most comprehensive analytics in team sports with a customizable interface to support real-time monitoring, recovery monitoring, performance management, and much more. The result? Data-driven decisions that support your athletes and team training, recovery, and performance goals. FirstBeat Sports is trusted by professionals. Over 23,000 athletes representing over 1,000 teams around the world rely on the solution to train and plan with confidence on a team and individual level using HRV-based insights. For more information, please visit our website, firstbeat.com/sports.
You're listening to the Taekwondo Podcast. Now back to your hosts, Coach Cesar Valentim and Peter Nessler.
Welcome back. Here we are talking about Taekwondo high performance, and today changing the topic a little bit, talking about Para Taekwondo Poomsae at the high performance level. The Para Taekwondo Poomsae is quite an interesting sport. A lot of athletes from different impairment groups will join to these competitions. We have the visually impaired, we have the intellectually impaired, we have the cerebral palsy athletes. We will have, according to the rules, also wheelchairs and all kind of walking aid divisions, and even amputee athletes in Poomsae. So it's a way bigger spectrum and a way bigger athlete pool than in Para Taekwondo Kirugi. And it's one of the few sports that some of the actually impaired athletes can do, because you don't see too many sports that allow intellectually impaired to compete in presentation sports. And people talk about Special Olympics, but Special Olympics is nothing compared to real sports high performance. It's a sports for all. It's the sport activity. It's not compared to Paralympic sports or the Virtus Games. So Para Poomsae is definitely something that interests a lot of people. It opens the opportunity for competition and of the society gathering of a lot more Taekwondo clubs than the Para Kirugi. And of course, it's much more accessible sport for many players and many coaches out there. Most people know I was in the inaugural PUMSE committee a long time ago. We created the first rules. We had para-taekwondo classification first and then para-taekwondo competition rules in Kyurugi and in PUMSE. And now we have a new generation. Some of my students are in charge of some of the commission, some of the in the para-taekwondo committee. And it's nice to see that PUMSE is moving forward after so long. I hate to say it was 5 years of absence in terms of para-taekwondo PUMSE development. And funny enough, the people nominated for those ad hoc committees is one of my co-hosts, actually my only co-host, Peter Nessler, and some of my friends from around the world. So Peter, can you tell us a little bit what you guys are doing now?
Yeah, first of all, I have to excuse me because as those rules are not officially out, they're not even voted for. I can only give you a glimpse what will be happening in that. But just to start from the beginning, as you said, we had a quite long break in the development of especially para PUMSE. The para Kyurugi moved a little bit on an even level, but okay. The para PUMSE had a pretty big setback, also caused by Corona 2020 on. So we have to start all over. And well, World Taekwondo wants to force the development of para PUMSE, of para sports, para Taekwondo, both Kyurugi and PUMSE. And so they want to finish those mosaics, which have been developing in the last months and years. Our part now from the newly formed ad hoc committee is the whole part of para PUMSE, and not only the rules, but also the referee education, all those things. First part, we fairly did a set of quite new rules for para PUMSE, which mean they are on the one hand a little more equal to the recognized PUMSE real rules regarding the structure or regarding those things like setup of the hall and all those things, because still we will have a lot of championships where you have both recognized or even three main things like recognized PUMSE, freestyle, and para PUMSE. So we also have to look for the organizers of those events. On the other hand, we always had a problem with the referees in para PUMSE because in most cases it was like that. You had a couple of referees there invited, and you said, now we have the para PUMSE, who wants to be referee? They have to know what they're doing. So it's not enough to have referees in there who know recognize PUMSE. You also have to have guys know about the classification and all those processes going on in para PUMSE. So this was the objective. Another objective was, no matter what role we create, they have to be a little easier than before. We had those bonuses, and we had kind of some things that were not really logical for the athletes. So just to give you a short overview, we'll start with a set of rules which is quite open, which is very wide. It defines the main parts of the whole game. So we have the sports classes, seven. We start with seven of them, with visual impairments, so P10, P20, intellectual, P30, neurological, the 40 physical in five different groups, the 50 assistive devices, the 60 deaf PUMSE, and the 70s, which is short stature. So that's the main part we start, but there is also other things in development for differently classified athletes as well. The system of the championships will be, as we know from recognized PUMSE, so like single elimination, cutoff system, and combination system, which is also new because before we only had cutoff. All the other things, we will have mandatory PUMSE from quite a big pool, but also we want to give the chance to especially P10 and P20 to prepare early. So we want to set a time frame. So you have to give the mandatory prompts far before the event starts, so they can prepare easily. So that is kind of the main things we're doing at the moment. And we start, we have already started with the educational part. So our time frame is quite tight because we have para consult games like in the end of the year. Yeah, let's see. The main task, in my opinion, is World Taekwondo wants to like re-establish all the para Taekwondo sport because it went down quite clearly. Also with the fact that Russian athletes at the moment are not allowed to compete. They have a lot of Karapanese athletes there. Let's see.
Yeah, the para Pumse world, after the rules were created, the original set of rules, there was a first referee seminar for the already existing Pumse international referees, and we had like 30 people doing it. Was
I did that one.
Yeah, I taught that one. it was a first approach, including refereeing progression rules for Pumse. It was very demanding at the time, but I do agree that a good solution for the P20s, the intellectually impaired athletes, is to give them the knowledge of the Pumse's, the draw of Pumse's way in advance, maybe even with the outline. The other thing is that when the rules were created back in 2016, the rules in terms of Paratekwondo classification only also at VIRTAS level, at the Paralympic level, and there were only one kind of intellectually impaired athletes, and the classification grouped them all together. And later on, through research, there is a division between the autistic and the other intellectual impairments. Of course, there's still the problem that some of the players cross different classifications. They can be both cerebral palsy, in deaf, visually impaired, and intellectually impaired. So it's not possible to create groups and competition rules for all of them, but there should be the crossing of those players taken into consideration. But for example, for the P10 classes, we're talking P10, we're talking about visually impaired and blind. And from my experience, those are highly functional cognitive players. Giving them the Pumse in advance is for any specific reason? Can you talk about it?
The thing is, the assumption is that those athletes in those divisions, not in those divisions, those sports classes, they need a long time to learn their Pumse. So we want to give them the chance to easily prepare for that.
Yes, but that's in a developing sport like most of the para sports, because it's new, most of the sports classes are still composed mainly of color belts and beginner athletes.
Yeah,
even Kyulugi. And then, okay, I understand it's a step to do on the long path of developing a sport. Para Kyulugi is growing. Grew faster the moment the Paralympic integration for Tokyo was approved back in 2014. So having the para Pumse also following that path, it's important, and I do understand the explanation that you need to prepare the athletes because they are beginners. I hope that in 10 years the rules will be adapted to reflect that high performance classes and sports classes are not the same.
That's what we had in our discussions as well. So this is a temporary set of rules which can easily be changed. So this part doesn't need to be forever. It's a development goal.
That's the oldest tradition in Taekwondo. It's change. so often.
Yeah.
And we just mentioned in the first part of this episode the changing of the rules. Even though there was no obvious reasons to change the rules, there it is. Something new. Always tweaks and better parts that need to be fixed, the language that needs to be bettered. And so it's interesting to see how the Parapumps is going to move on. I'm really looking forward to having those amazing Parapumps competitions. We had so much fun. We had so much joy working in Parapumps development and seeing the joy of the players competing in Parapumps alongside with the recognized Pumps and Freestyle Pumps. So I'm good for you, Peter, to be in there, because it's good to see someone that is so active. And I think you are one of the most active Pumse referees in Europe. Do you have any free weekend in February?
in February, at the moment, February is a month with only 28 days. I have 4 events. So President's Cup, Turkish Open, French Open, German Open, which means 4, 5, 7 days of event. Yeah, pretty tough. I hope there is one more chance to go in February. They don't invite me.
We'll have the European Championships in Austria in November in Pumse. We will also see Parapumse on those events.
I hope so. Until then, everything is ready, set, and could go. It's good to have the Europeans back in Austria after 30 years. It's in the same region. It's not the same city, but it's the same region. I hope there will be broad participation from all the nations, a little more than in Portugal last time, because we missed some big teams like Turkey or Great Britain. So now, as Corona is, I think we can manage all that now. We'll have a really nice event in November.
Yes, the November in the mountains in Austria. It's not snowing too much. It's not too cold yet. Well, for Austrians, it depends where you come from. But for us, it's definitely not too cold. And it's definitely one of the most interesting cities for you to visit, because it's the Ex Libris of Austria, or of course the Alps that Austrians are known around the world. Don't expect to be seeing people in the street singing The Sound of Music, but you're free to climb into the mountains, put your lederhose and start singing. The hills are alive, Pumse is alive, and I'm pretty sure we'll have a lot of fun in the mountains.
Take with you warm clothes.
Good, Peter. It was a pleasure being here with you and with everyone who is listening. This was a Taekwondo podcast. If you haven't already, listen to our other episodes that are available wherever you listen to your podcasts. We are releasing new episodes every Tuesday. Stay tuned, subscribe to the podcast, leave us a positive review, and share it with your friends. See you next time.
You've been listening to the Taekwondo Podcast, keeping the fans, coaches, and high-performance athletes up to date with the latest news and trends on Olympic Taekwondo. Your host, Coach Cesar Valentim, has almost 20 years of experience with high-performance Taekwondo and has worked all around the world as a Taekwondo trainer. Peter Nessler has been teaching Taekwondo for more than 20 years, and he's currently one of the top referees in Europe. We hope you enjoyed the show. Make sure to like, rate, and review. And we'll be back soon. But in the meantime, find us on Instagram at Taekwondo Podcast, on Facebook at Taekwondo Cast, and the website taekwondopodcast.com. See you next time.